And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to ericmassel.com, and he spells his name ericmassel, ericmassel.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Clarity International, publisher of the book Get Clarity, The Lights-On Guide to Manifesting Success in Life and Work. GetClarity.com. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. NewDimensions.org.
I'm here with Dr. Eric Maisel, and he is the author of Brave New Mind, The Art of Serene Readiness. Eric, going back to life purpose, you have suggested that we do actually think about our life philosophy, to create a philosophy of our life.
I think one way to think about it is the following. Those kinds of icons that religions promote, like the cross or the Star of David, when a believer wears that, that communicates to them something really important. Maybe no words attach. Maybe you can't really know what the words are, but they do a certain kind of work. A whole life philosophy is encapsulated in that icon. I think people can create their own life purpose icon that does exactly the same kind of work. I've talked about that in certain books, and people have tried it out, and they come up with things like lightning bolts or oak trees or all kinds of different things which communicate the essence of their life philosophy to them. So it has to be something essential. It can't be a life philosophy with 19 tenets. Nobody's going to remember it for themselves. It's almost a feeling tone, the same sort of feeling tone that do the next right thing communicates. I think a life philosophy can be something as simple as human nature. I understand that human beings are who they are. I'm not going to try to make them into something else. Some simple idea that can be grasped in the moment. As I say, mine is do the next right thing. My other one is just the word process, just to keep reminding ourselves that what just occurred is part of the process and there'll be more process coming. So I think the task, the main aspects of the task is to not get locked into the idea that there is a singular purpose. The second is to actually generate that list of life purposes. That actually becomes your life philosophy. My life philosophy is I'm living my life purposes. And if you have your list, let me just make up a made-up list of some important things that could be important to somebody. Parenting, relationships, creativity, career, service, activism. Let's just stick with those six. Having that list alone is important. Just having generated that list is a big deal. It's you saying to yourself, some things are more important than other things. Some things are more important than TV or checking my email or texting. Some things are more important. These are the six. And now I'm going to get them onto my daily to-do list somehow. This is not just a list for the future, something to look at or something to journal about. I'm actually going to align my thoughts with these ideas and align my actions, align my behaviors. What does that look like? A very organized life in a disorganized time. I believe that we have to be at a higher level of organization than we actually want to be. It's boring to be that organized, but I think we need it now if we're going to actually get to our life purposes. So this would look like an hour of writing your novel, and then an hour of meaning neutral while you're stuck in traffic, and then an hour of chatting with your daughter at college, that's the relationship one, and then this and then that. Spending a day living your life purposes, where you could say at the end of the day, I did what I intended to do. I made myself proud. Some things didn't go well, process, mistakes, messes, this, that, and the other thing, but I'm paying attention to my life purposes. So I think that's sort of the model or the methodology.
When I went through that exercise, so to speak, I gave myself the exercise to write down some of those purposes for myself. And I came up with what I value, what I'm using. I call it as my compass.
Yep.
As giving me direction if I'm making a decision. One is cultivating curiosity, to stay in that place of curiosity rather than kind of, oh, this is the way it is, and I think I know this truth, and it's always going to be this way. But rather keep it more open, so remain curious. Another one is to reconnect with my breath. That's one of my techniques that I try and remind myself when I get into that feeling of anxiety or stress or even despair, to go to my breath. And another one is, I believe that humans are tribal, so it's about connectivity, that did I connect with another in a positive way today? So these are a few of the little things that I wrote down for myself.
If I can piggyback on that,
please,
on the breath one. In talking about serenity and readiness together, I did a book called 10 Zen Seconds, and the 10 of that title is a deep breath, 5 seconds on the inhale, 5 seconds on the exhale. And the idea of the book was a very simple one, and that is to gain the psychological and cognitive benefits of right thinking with the physiological benefits of deep breathing. To say that simply, to drop a phrase into a breath. And I call those incantations. They're really affirmations in a breath, but they have the breathing component and the thinking component, and they become ceremonial bridges of readiness. So let's say you're wandering around the house doing stuff, but you're trying to get to your novel, but you can't quite get to writing your novel. Well, you could take a couple of deep breaths and drop in a phrase like, I'm completely ready, or I'm stopping now. Or just, it has to be obviously just 3 or 4 words, and just say it a few times. And this promotes readiness, and it also actually gets you ready to move from that thing I said earlier, right mind to mind that can make mistakes. Then when you leave your creative, let's say you made it there to your creative work, and now you're trying to leave, same idea of deep breathing, and now I return with strength to the rest of my day. That kind of phraseology. Now you're ready. Because often we claim to be exhausted. We spent an hour writing, I need a nap. But we can say to ourselves, I'm still ready. If you are exhausted, you are exhausted. I do not mean to make light of actual exhaustion. But if it's not real exhaustion, but you're not really ready to face the rest of your day, you can talk yourself out of that by saying, I'm ready to face the rest of my day. So this simple idea of dropping words into a breath, it's actually pretty magical.
This just takes me to one of the legs of that four-legged stool we were talking about earlier. And one of the legs is having a toolkit ready, like we talked about the breath.
Exactly.
That's something that we have. So let's talk about collecting, having a readiness toolkit at our disposal.
Yep. Well, it can't be too many items, because too many items we can't keep track of or make use of. Let me just name some main ones. There are many tributaries and smaller ones. The main one is the redesign your mind one, the visualizing, understanding that you can visualize your mind as a room and make changes that you need to make, so that you do something different from just arm wrestling thoughts, but actually change the thoughts. You're changing the source of the thoughts. So having as part of your toolkit, visualizing, knowing to do that, there are tons of visualizing in the book that comes with, Redesign Your Mind. There are lots of visualizations. Visualizing is a tool. The thing I just mentioned, the breathing thinking combination, is a tool. The idea of pathways to meaning is a tool. That is, if you were to say to yourself, what would invite meaning back into my life at this moment? Meaning fled. I don't know why. Have no idea. I can imagine why. Maybe I had some stray thought or something on the news. I don't know why. But here are the ways I can invite meaning back, and then just have three or four pathways back that work for you. One is some simple ones. This is getting too elaborate to be really remembered, but these are all interrelated ideas. One pathway to the reenchantment of meaning is memory, to just take a moment and remember something good. Sounds so simple, but how often in a day does anyone stop to remember something good? That moment on the beach 33 years ago, or walking down a side street of Paris, or something. That's part of this. That's part of this activity of having a toolkit, is to understand that there are places, doors to open. When you walk through them, meaning might return. Then there are all kinds of anxiety management tools that ought to be part of this. Let me just mention one or two. There are probably 20 kinds of them, and we can't do them all, but there's one I want to share that I think is probably maybe top of the line. And that's the idea of disidentification, which is a word very much like detachment in Buddhism. It was invented by an Italian psychologist named Assagioli, and it's a hallmark of a brand of psychology called psychosynthesis. It's a very simple idea. It's, I'm not my products, I'm not my temporal things, I'm different from and separate from the book may not have worked. Maybe I wrote a stinker, I'm okay. It's not making that movement from the book's not okay to I'm not okay. That's the idea of disidentification. That's a super large tool to have in your toolkit, to not attack yourself. If something didn't go well, something didn't go well. But you don't have to go from there to, I'm ashamed, I'm not okay, I'm worthless, to that place that so many people go without the words. They're not hearing words like, I'm ashamed. They're not hearing those words, but they're feeling it. Feeling embarrassed. That's why we all know what the world's number one phobia is. Performance anxiety. Public speaking. We're so pre-embarrassed about what we're about to say. It's kind of amazing. More than planes, spiders, bridges, bugs, anything. Public speaking, should that be so dangerous? But it is. That's how people experience it. So I'm not sure where I am exactly, except to say that there are lots of small anxiety management tools like disidentification, like prayer, like ceremonies, but we need to own one or two of them, not just know about them, but really be practicing them.
I'm just thinking, as you were talking about visualization, going to like a memory that gives you joy, I'm thinking if you do that, that's actually a very somatic thing. It's not just a memory in your brain.
No.
It's like your body remembers it.
No, and it's beautiful, isn't it? And then if you associate it, for instance, with music, you can, you know, sing to yourself.
Yeah.
Some Motown song from my generation.
I'm also thinking, Eric, also that feeling of fear or despair, something
yep.
like that, it actually narrows our perception.
Anxiety is the great silencer. When in working with creative and performing artists, I have to work with anxiety all the time because it forces them not to try. It feels dangerous to do their work. So as a visualization, if we're in the room that is your mind, if we're in that place where you visualize it now with nice white walls rather than dingy walls and all the furniture you want and whatever you need, in one corner of the room, you can install a speaker's corner, like in Hyde Park in London, where for hundreds of years, people could say what was on their mind without retaliation, without reprisal. We need our own speaker's corner in our own mind where we can tell ourselves the truth. And I think that's one way to deal with ambient anxiety is to have a place where we can tell ourselves the truth. That doesn't mean we're going to say it out in the world. That's a different thing. There are real safety issues about letting things out into the world, and we have to titrate and measure what we say into the world. But at least we want to say things to ourselves that are truthful. One of the ways we reduce anxiety is getting underneath the radar of our own defenses. We're all defensive creatures. Freud was smart about defenses. He was a little wacky about many things, but he was right on about defenses. We do use all of those defenses, the two dozen that he named, rationalization, intellectualization, denial, projection, all of them. We use them all. Displacement, smacking the dog because you want to smack your boss. We do all of these things. We want to get to know them for ourselves. We want to become more self-aware. A lot of what you and I are talking about is a project in self-awareness. It's about personal truthfulness. It's what existentialism is rooted in, personal responsibility and knowing ourselves. And not just knowing ourselves, but then taking the actions that flow from knowing what we think is right to do. It's not just knowing the thing to do, but then actually doing it.
When you said getting under the anxiety, I'm thinking of firemen talk about getting under the smoke. That's the way they don't go right into the smoke, but they crouch down and get underneath the smoke.
That's right. There's a reason why the trickster image is in all indigenous cultures, and it's us. It may be a crow or a raven or something in Native American law. It may be some animal, fox or this or that, but it's us. We're very tricky creatures. Here are two ways we trick ourselves all day long. This is, again, coming from my work with creative performing artists who will say, I can't do my work because, and here are the two becauses. I'm just pausing for effect. Ready?
Yes.
I'm too busy and I'm too tired. All day long, they're saying this. I'm too tired to face my novel, or I'm too busy right now to do X. We all need to append that big but, the big B-U-T. I am tired, but I can spend 15 minutes on my novel. Or I am busy, but I can spend 15 minutes on my symphony. But this is us being honest. If you hear yourself saying, I'm too tired, and you're not really that tired, then you have to say, no, I'm not that tired. Or I'm not that busy, or I am busy, but I know what to do. I know how to organize my life so that I can get to my life purposes.
I'm thinking when you say that, you might break down whatever that task is, that creative act is, into small increments. So if you do something, let's say,
yes,
okay, I'm going to do it for 30 minutes.
Or 2 minutes. My phrase for this is to not scorn small increments of time. Right now, people throw away time. We know exactly how they're doing it. Texting, checking their email, surfing somewhere on the net. Everybody's doing it, and we can barely not do it. If you were to, let's say you're working on a novel, let's just use that example. You would want to generate a list of small things you could do in 2 to 5 minutes and have that list as close to you as your phone is. And so you would know, I think I could spend 2 minutes describing Prague, because in chapter 19, I'm going to have to describe Prague. So let me just spend 2 minutes describing Prague. Or let me spend 5 minutes doing the backstory of character Anne or something. But without that list, that's not available to do. You would just check your email again. You would just text. You need both the list and the habit of turning to this small increment list.
To write down the list.
Exactly. Exactly. This is so valuable. Most creative people don't have checklists for the things that they're doing. Maybe they feel like checklists are antithetical to the creative process. They're not. Or maybe they've just never thought about it. For instance, almost no creative person has a completion checklist. We could spend an hour on just what a completion checklist would look like and how valuable it would be to know what amounts to completion. Because creatives are telling themselves all the time, because they don't want to show the work and get criticized, they're holding off completing. So they stay at the 96% place and they say to themselves, Well, when my readers get back to me, then I'll finish the book. Or the book needs to marinate for the next 2 months in like olive oil, and then I'll come back to it. And they have all kinds of ways of saying I'm not quite ready to finish it. And that's where a completion checklist would be a powerful tool.
So it's that mantra, do the next indicated step. This worked for me when I wrote my last book, and I was too busy. I was, not confident I would even be able to do it. But yep. I made a commitment. I said, okay, for the next 4 Saturdays, I'm going to sit down for 1 hour on Saturday before exactly. I even get dressed. I made the commitment. I'll say, all right, I'll go fix my coffee. I'll go to the bathroom, but I'm going to go right to my computer and I'm going to write for 1 hour each Saturday. And I found that when I started doing that, I got so engrossed in the project. I actually didn't spend 1 hour.
That's
I would
exactly
spend
right.
all afternoon.
Metaphor for that is you can't eat one potato chip. Once the bag's open, you got to eat 19 potato chips.
Yeah, but I didn't have to work all afternoon. I just had to
That's
meet
right.
the commitment of 1 hour, and it worked. And
That's
in
great.
No time, I was able to finish
and
it.
I try to sell my clients. This is a big subject to try to tackle in a minute, but I invite them and advise them to do their creative work first thing in the morning, so that they can make use of their sleep thinking. We dream while we sleep, but we also think while we sleep. Folks don't understand this idea very well. I have a book on that coming out shortly called Night Brilliance, which is about our ability to think while we sleep and how to make use of that by giving ourselves a sleep thinking prompt. We can solve problems. We can work on our creative work. But we have to show up to the work first thing so that the sleep thinking doesn't evaporate. As soon as we turn to the new day, all of that good work vanishes. So there's a whole idea here. It's actually very important for creatives because they can get an hour and a half of free creative time for real for free just by understanding this sleep thinking idea. And then they can wake up. If you're working on a novel, you wake up and just take dictation because Mary's been talking to John all night long in chapter 3. And now all I have to do is get it down. So it's really an amazing blessing in the creative process to make use of your sleep thinking. The sleep thinking is really interesting. I invite people to investigate it because it for me, it's mostly for how creative people can use it. But it's really, I've had so many people solve really, really sticky problems effortlessly by turning it over to their sleeping mind.
And as you say, you have to kind of tune into it right away when you first
you
get up. You don't.
It's the opposite of getting alert. People think, well, I can't do anything in the morning because I'm not alert. But you should not want to be alert. Stay dreamy, because then you get to use your. If you stay dreamy, don't trip down the stairs and don't stay that dreamy, but stay dreamy enough that you can really act that your sleep thinking wants to proceed into your mind.
Great, great. This is really great, great advice and something to try out. And do you have any advice about how to maintain our momentum of serene readiness? If there's anything that you could say about that or the motivation, because we get so distracted by life these days.
I don't know if I have one thing to say, except that I know that we're more interested in making ourselves proud than making ourselves feel happy. We value our own principles, and if we do something that might even take our own life, some courageous act, we will do that. It's not going to make us happy, not going to make our family happy to do dangerous things, but we intend to do the right thing. We don't always do it. Sometimes we don't know what the right thing is. It's too complicated. The situation, there's too much information we don't have, etc. But I think what helps us keep momentum is returning to the understanding that we want to make ourselves proud by our efforts. It's about personal pride.
I'm thinking when you say that, I'm just thinking about the courage that often maybe goes along with serene readiness. Sometimes it takes courage. It doesn't, to be serenely ready doesn't mean that we negate the fear. And I'm thinking of the people who are showing up with nonviolence against just all sorts of violent insurrections going on right now.
Yeah, this
and
fascist
I'm
moment.
I'm so impressed with people
who are showing up. And in a funny way, I want to get my words careful here. In a funny way, people have been wanting the opportunity to do this, the opportunity to have some place to make themselves proud. It's not that they want the fascism, but they do want opportunities to make themselves proud. And that's something for them to consider, how to create those opportunities for personal pride. We've been talking about that really for the whole time in different ways, that all of this readiness and serenity is instrumental, it's purposeful. It's for living the life you intend to lead, a value-based life. So,
wow, thank you, thank you. I mean, all that you're saying today is just leading us to a greater understanding of how we can contribute and how we stay with our own compass of our own life in a good and powerful way to be creative individuals that we really want to be. I want to thank you so much, Eric, for being with us today on New Dimensions.
Thank you so much.
I've been speaking with Dr. Eric Maisel, and he is the author of Brave New Mind, The Art of Serene Readiness. And he's also, going along with that book is Night Brilliance, The Sleep Thinker's Guide to Powerful Problem Solving. And if you want to know more about his work, go to ericmaisel.com. And he spells his name ericmaisel. ericmaisel.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3857.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore new dimensions.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, online at cjsf.ca, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC, home of McFog the Dog.
How much do you love this station? People dedicated to your community. News that directly matters to you. This station needs your support. Go to mycri.ca to find out more about the Community Radio Initiative, which will provide core funding for this station. At MyCRI, you will find an easy way to create an email that you can send to the politicians who need to hear your message. Just 5 minutes and a few clicks make a big difference. MyCRI.